Welcome to the Therapist Connect podcast. Dr. Peter Blundell interviews therapists about their work and experiences within the therapist community.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Therapist Connect podcast. My name is Dr. Peter Blundell, and today I'm delighted to be interviewing Dr. Ruth Allen. Ruth is a humanistic, body-informed counseling psychotherapist with philosophical underpinnings in eco-psychology and existential meaning-making. She works both outdoors and online in private practice. Ruth has a wealth of experience working in eco-psychology and outdoor counseling and psychotherapy, and we're going to be talking about her approach to counseling throughout this episode today.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me today, though. It's really great.
I'm really grateful for you to do it. I really appreciate it. So thank you very much. And I absolutely love your engagement with Twitter. I just think it is really lovely and refreshing. And it's just very... Oh, yeah, I do. I do. Yeah.
Oh, God, it causes me anguish.
What causes you anguish?
I don't know. I mean, Twitter is hard, isn't it? I mean, I've over the years got really used to Instagram.
Yeah.
And it's a much warmer, generous, non-argumentative community.
Yeah.
And I've kind of got used to the fact of, you know, I resolved my piece a long time ago with the idea of being a bit more seen as a therapist, perhaps, than some people would be comfortable with. But I find what Twitter brings out in me and how Twitter is, it just, I don't know, it's on the edge of being too vulnerable. But then I'm really into just being honest. And I don't know, I always think, would I mind if a client read this, knowing that there will be clients reading it? And then I think, it's fine. But I also feel a bit thin-skinned around it as well. So I don't know. Yeah, it just fills me with anguish. Other people must feel this way. Do you not feel this way about Twitter?
Absolutely.
What you started with that. Isn't it amazing the way it really, really, it just caught, didn't it?
I mean, I laugh because some people go, thank you so much. And for all you know, there's this thought through campaign. And I say, it wasn't that at all. It was a tweet, which I thought about for about 3 seconds before I went into a meeting. And came out of that meeting with 300 people kind of commenting and retweeting it. And I just kind of was like, what on earth is going on? It's been strange, but it's been lovely as well. I have spoken to so many therapists, you know, interacted and everything over the past 5 months. It's just been, I've loved it. It's been absolutely wonderful.
That's great. I bet you've just got a long, long list of people to have on the podcast, right?
I've then had people saying, oh, please, can I be out? And I'm like, yeah, that's absolutely fine, but just have to book.
Yeah, it's going to be sometime in 2021.
Yeah, exactly. But it's been lovely. And I think one of the reasons why I wanted to do it was because people loved this idea of connecting with each other. I just think there's so many people doing wonderful stuff out there. It's really nice to just hear about it in a bit more detail. It's been a joy, actually. But I'm very interested. I don't know that much about outdoor kind of therapy. Obviously, I kind of know a little bit. So I'm really interested, actually, to hear about your work. And I think there's a bit of a tide turning. I don't know about whether you agree with this, where people seem to be accepting it more, and also therapists seem to be very, very interested in it as a so would you be able to tell everyone who's listening a little bit about your journey to becoming a therapist, and then particularly about how you came to be an outdoor therapist and coach?
Sure. It's been like a lot of people, it's kind of a winding road, isn't it? I knew that I'd always been, nature's always been a really big part of my life. So, and certainly in my adult years, I don't remember so much of my childhood, but I know it was important then too. But just sort of being outdoors, but it's been particularly important in my adulthood. But I suppose I didn't really feel, I had to feel like it was the right time. So in my sort of 20s, I did quite a lot of volunteering for the Samaritans and got really interested in suicidality and sort of human despair. And I headed up a prison team at that time. And it really sort of planted the seed, I suppose, of wanting to work in with people. And at that time, I was still in the world of geology. And so that was like kind of my previous career. And I was in higher education. I'd done my PhD in geology. And I suppose I just got to a point where I thought, you know, I love rocks, but I don't see where my future is in working with just working with rocks. I mean, it was really interesting, but it started to feel almost indefensible, which is probably a strange way of putting it, but it just I it didn't sit with me in terms of what what kind of value am I bringing to the world. But I felt like I had to wait for that call. I had to wait for the, I suppose, what you would call the, you know, the call in the second half of life, in the second part of life, that sort of sense of that Jungian second half, when you move perhaps from ambition and career to vocation. And I didn't really get that call until about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. But at that point, I decided I wanted to sort of formalize my counseling training. But I knew immediately I wasn't going to work indoors. Well, that was the plan. I didn't want to work indoors, but I knew that I would have to train indoors, because that's the way it's still done, isn't it? I mean, that's the way fundamentally our training is still offered. So I kind of knew that that was going to have to be my route, but I knew from the outset I want to qualify and I want to move straight outdoors. So that I think is a slightly different process. I came to it from, this is, you know, the outdoors does so much for me, nature does so much for me, how can I bring my outdoor life and my outdoor experience together with counseling and psychotherapy? And it really started there, I suppose. And then I've always been involved in coaching as well. So I suppose it's been quite organic that I've developed these two spheres of work. Yeah. There's the therapy, and then there's the almost what I would call public communication, communicating the work, more outreach, more sort of online sharing of well-being stuff and mental health and nature. That's not therapy, but they obviously clearly have the joining values and the joining sort of practices in the middle, I suppose. And that's just the way it's developed. That those two parts are still really important to me: the communication of it for everyone, and the private therapeutic practice.
I mean, it's really interesting, isn't it? The idea that there is so many connections between nature and our own well-being and mental health. But then obviously in the therapy community, it's almost kind of like felt like, well, but we do that inside, and we do it in the therapy room, and actually making those connections back again with nature and the outside world feels actually quite important and quite almost where we've come from. We're going back to where we came from originally.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's very old wisdom. That's the thing. I think outdoor therapy is really emerging again. It's having a moment, isn't it? And it's for various different reasons, I think, which we'll probably come to. But there's nothing new about it. You know, that our oldest wisdoms and ways of being have been tuned into nature. There have always been healers, there have always been people that have helped other people, facilitated by nature. So it's very old, and it draws on lots of old indigenous wisdom when you really get down to the roots of outdoor or ecotherapy, as I'm moving more towards now. It was us that took all of the healing business inside, I think, and made it into a business, and made it medicalized it and pathologized health. And so actually it's very natural to go back outside, and it's got a rich heritage in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. For anyone who's listening, who maybe has got an idea but maybe not a full understanding, how would you define or describe outdoor therapy and coaching? Because you referred there to ecotherapy as well, so it sounds like you've maybe changed your mind in terms of how you define it and describe it.
Oh, goodness. It's a lot, and it's a lot of things, and there's a lot of ways that we could go off here, and there's a lot of debate around, is it a modality? Is it a method? Is it So, you know, we could talk about this for the whole hour. I think it's a lot of different things to different people. It's everything from walk and talk. So it's very much just take out the room and go and walk and talk. And I think that's when it said it's most just kind of it's a tool level. And then I think it, you know, on the other end, there's really quite a political practice that's, you know, it brings in all sorts. It brings in ecology and animal rights and environmentalism and social justice and feminism, embodiment. It's really kind of spans the whole mix. And so at its most basic level, for me, it's taking psychotherapy and soul work to some degree into a different space. But I'm starting to move away increasingly from the idea of outdoor therapy. I think that outdoor is not the work of it, but the term. I think partly I've been using that for the last few years, but there's something about the vernacular of that which seems to, it chimes a lot with the outdoor industry. I think it's quite palatable, it's quite now. Ecotherapy, I think, has you know, it takes it more into the philosophical sphere, and perhaps then it becomes off-putting to certain people. So certain things going on there. But for me to come back to ecotherapy, I think it marks a sort of a continual movement to the deeper underlying roots of it, which are around eco-psychology, really. The roots of my practice run fairly deep, and they're deepening all the time. So I'm starting to identify more with that. And also I think you're an outdoor therapist, whether you're practicing outdoors or not. I'm still an ecotherapist when I'm online. And that's because it infuses my work, the eco-psychological, I suppose, underlying principles are always there. I don't just have them when I go outside. So things, you know, in eco-psychology, you've just got within it this notion that humans aren't centric. We're not the only species. It's all about sort of interbeing and the transpersonal elements.
And it feels like that's like the philosophy that runs through all of your work, really, and informs all of the work that you do.
Yeah, it really does. And so when I see people talking about, you know, how should we bring politics and social justice into therapy? For me, I just think, well, I couldn't take it out. Mm. Ecotherapy, because of its kind of, in a way, it has been described as the therapeutic practice of eco-psychology, which is more of the theory. So you can't divorce it from that in a way. You can if you just say we just go outside the room and you have your reason for that. But for me, it is about the politics and the philosophy underlying it. It does embody at the core of it something about embracing all species, and it does tie in all of these different issues, and they're so emergent at the moment. And I think it's richer for that. So. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how. Like, I could not be political in my work because of that.
It's embedded within what you do, really.
Yeah, and part of that is very much moving away from this non-medicalized, non-pathologizing practice. It's, for me, it's about saying healing doesn't happen in there, in these kind of four walls, in this healthcare setting. I'm strongly opposed to that. I feel like we need to get people outside. We need to, and this is about the deprivatization of suffering, I guess. And I talk about this quite a lot. And there's paradoxes in that, because I have to work in private practice because this isn't mainstream. So I have to charge money. There's a problem there. Yeah. But there's something about moving it outside to a natural place of healing, not shutting individuals behind closed doors and saying, oh, you know, you're on your own, there's something wrong with you, you need to go and speak to a therapist. It's like, let's get outside, let's walk alongside each other as humans, and let's kind of give it out to the world, you know, let's bring nature in. And so ecotherapies, it's more than the two of you, it's three. True ecotherapy, when you're bringing nature in, it's a triad, it's not the dyad situation. So yeah. Again, there's a big sort of difference there.
So I'm just thinking therapy within the therapy room, and then therapy within, or not within, outside in the world outside. There is obviously quite a lot of differences between those two settings. So you've practiced in both, haven't you? In both.
Yeah.
how would you, I mean, I imagine there's a lot of differences, but how would you kind of, what would be the main differences, would you say, in terms of working in those two different, I'm going to say settings, but I suppose it could be two potentially different approaches as well in terms of how you work?
I think it's a big question. I think it's one I'm still very much exploring myself. I'm very new and I'm still very passionate and excited about it, but it is very new and part of me doesn't want to resolve that mystery. So I'm always looking for like, where's the edgy stuff in this that I don't know about? And just experiencing that. I mean, the two obvious things that come to mind is that it's the psychological impact of being without walls, for one thing. Yeah. I think a lot of people will say, oh, they'll walk into the space and their body will kind of, you know, obviously listeners can't hear, but I'm kind of collapsing into my seat. My shoulders are down. There's that sense of, oh, I can breathe out here. And people will often like look at the sky and they're just a sense of, you know, there's space to think and to feel. Yeah. And so I think for a lot of people, that's really important. It was important for me. I always found my own therapy indoors quite stifling. And again, I'm pulling at my shirt and my top now, my neckline instinctively, because there was that sense of, ooh, I'm stuck in a room. So I think that's one of the things. But also our bodies are in perpetual motion. So obviously, you know, body work, body psychotherapy has got a very long, rich tradition of its own. And a lot of that will be indoors, but some of that's also outdoors. And I think in the way I work in my practice, we're constantly moving. I mean, you know, we do stop, and actually those stops and those pauses are really important. They're often notable, and we look at where we're going and how we're journeying through the space. But the core of it is we're moving. And I think that perpetual movement is really important. It's, you know, we're beings in movement. At its most depressing, we're moving towards death, right? Yeah. Sure, Mick Cooper would agree with me on this. We are kind of directional in that way. But we also do really well when we're out and we change our environment and we're moving. We tend to solve problems. We think more creatively. So I think, you know, those to me are two really obvious things. Mm. But then you've also got a real richness of metaphor and nature's materiality to sort of give you a language. So for people perhaps that find it quite hard just to say, this is what I'm feeling, there's an opportunity to really draw on the visuals of the landscape. And, you know, I lost count of the number of times we've walked into a kind of a tangled, I've talked about this before, but it's a really common one, walking into a kind of a tangle of trees, which is quite common in the space that I work in. And people will go, oh, yeah, this is my brain. And that's so useful. Mm. That's such a useful to actually be under the tangle of trees and look up and say, oh, you know, this is like my brain. I mean, yeah. That's really great. It offers such a rich metaphor, I suppose, for people to draw on. And then, you know, without, there's not just that, but then there's the extra stuff, which is really exciting, around the transpersonal, the lived experience, the moment of being outside the here and now, which is in itself, I think, really important to the human soul, to well-being.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking and then, oh, look, birds, or doesn't that wind sound amazing, or fresh rain. And these things, they don't have to mean anything more than they are. They're just being in touch with nature, which is very restorative. I mean, these are the things that jump out to me. And obviously some of this is replicable indoors.
It's really interesting, that connection between, it was quite vivid there when you're describing kind of being tangled within the trees. And I'm thinking, gosh, actually, it does sound like that the outdoors is the third person within the therapy, because they're actually interacting with it at that time as the therapy is happening. But also that idea that as you are outside, that the world is just happening around you, and it can just be that, just noticing that.
Noticing that the world is happening around you, absolutely. And you don't, I often find you don't need to interfere in the process. You know, you can sort of, nature will reveal itself and people will have their own engagement, and they'll see what they see, and they'll be affected by what they're affected by. And my supervisor, Hayley Marshall, she talks about it as like the living third in the relation, in the therapeutic relationship. And it's so true. I think if you don't stand in the way of that and you take out the your therapist ego and just let the person have that experience, that will also give them something. Life is carrying on around you. And a lot of people worry about the damage to the therapeutic frame with outdoor therapy. They worry that it's, you know, how do you guarantee confidentiality? I hear people say, you can't mitigate against all the risk, but this is what it is to be alive in the world. It's risky. There isn't always guaranteed confidentiality. We can't control everything. So for me, it's really important to bring that into the work, to say, well, there's going to be things here we can't control. How are we going to work with that anyway? Mm. You know, when it's rained 5 weeks solidly and it's just felt miserable, well, yeah. That's what it's like, isn't it? When you have low mood or you're depressed or you're miserable, you can't get out of it. You don't get to just switch direction and say, oh, well, you know, I want better. Of course you do. We have to work with what we have, with what we're given in the moment. So this all comes alive for me when we go outside, I think, which is really exciting. And it just brings stuff up.
Well, that's what I was almost, no, that it was kind of what you were saying there anyway. I was going to ask, there is some element of unpredictability about that then, isn't there, as to what you will bump into, what the weather will be like, what will happen because you're in an outdoor space. But I imagine there's challenges but rewards to that unpredictability as well.
Oh, and it's hard. I think speaking from a therapist's point of view, it's... I would say my experience of it is this extra cognitive load in a way, because you're also thinking about what you're talking about with the client and what you're experiencing. You're also risk checking. You're also keeping an eye on your environment all the time. I see this particularly in coaching, where I might do a coaching day. They can be really hard because I'm also thinking of what direction are we going in? What's happening to the weather? Are they hungry? Am I hungry? How am I feeling in my body? Am I tired? And so that extra embodiedness of it can be quite, it brings an extra layer, I think. But the uncertainty and all of that stuff that you can't control, I think, is also really great. It enlivens the therapeutic process, I think. I've noticed people will say, you know, things can happen quite quickly that they perhaps will say themselves they don't think they would have got to in a few weeks. I mean, it's hard to know that, but there's a kind of a quickened process in some ways. Mm.
Almost like a freeing up of your experience, really, when you're outdoors, and that it...
Yeah.
I was going to say pushes, but that's the wrong word, but maybe kind of frees you up to kind of... visit those experiences and understand them.
Exactly. And how great to have that almost built into the structure and the process and the form of the therapeutic encounter, that it sets the permissions for that kind of thing, that it says this is what's available, it's built in. And I think that's quite exciting. And then of course you're next to somebody and, you know, they see... the number of times I've been outside and I've like tripped over or something, or stumbled, not, you know, flat on my face, but I've like tripped over rocks, or I've kind of, you know, been going through kind of brambles or something, or getting just really bedraggled in the rain. And your clients see you. They see you as a person with them. And I really value that, the humanity of that. I mean, it's funny because ecotherapy is very much about taking humans at the center in a way, and this notion of interconnectedness. And at the same time, another paradox is that I'm really deeply Rogerian as well, in as much as, you know, the transformative power of relationships and just being congruent and being wholly you and being authentic and just really loving the client. So there's all of that going on as well. And I really felt from the beginning of my therapy journey, I don't want to do work where I'm not going to be seen as I am, where I'm not going to do true soulful work. I'm not going to be afraid of that, was kind of what I decided. And, you know, because I'd spend the first part of your life building up your ego and your career. And I thought, I'm done with that. I just want to be just want to be whole and normal, and that's not the same as it being about me, you know. Therapy, it's not that at all, but it's just, for me, it's being practicing in a way outside as a way of just being like, yeah, here I am, another human, and I think I've got some stuff that can help you. Let's do it together.
Yeah. And it's like, it sounds like it's very approach a very authentic place, you know. This is me, and this is kind of what I believe in, and that feeds into your therapeutic approach, as it would do for anyone.
I suppose it does, which I know that people will question that in the way that they question you know, the value of ecotherapy or outdoor therapy, because it is pretty much a case of, yeah, you can tell something quite clearly about me and my philosophy from my website or from my social media.
Yeah.
And so that does mean that I'm going to attract certain people who are probably feeling similar ways, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I mean, it means that it's a challenge to diversifying my practice, certainly. Mm. It means that there's a challenge in there around, yeah, just, I don't know, yeah, I guess just primarily it's that diversification,
yeah,
isn't it? And I guess people will think, oh, you're bringing too much of yourself, but at the same time, I think I work generally in long-term therapy with people, and so I think you get an informed choice. You know the kind of person I am. You're not going to know all of my thoughts, but you know roughly how I'm going to be aligned, and I think that's about informed consent. You know, nobody gets allocated me.
<It's, Yeah.
laughs> and I don't get allocated them, we choose, and if we don't like it, we go and we find someone else to work with. So but that, I guess that being seen in that way for some people will be quite a challenge to perhaps a more traditional view of, it's not, you know, it's not about being seen, but what you think and feel or experience or believe is not relevant in the therapy room. And
although all of those things probably influence the type of approach and that we believe in and that we use, so it's so
it, yeah, for right. Me, I mean, it comes out anyway, doesn't it?
Exactly. I find it. I don't know how we could separate those things almost.
Exactly. Really. Maybe just own it.
Yeah.
Maybe just own it.
Yeah. But this is who I am. This is the approach I believe in, and this is what I think it has to offer.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, we touched on it a little bit there, but how do you think that outdoor therapy and ecotherapy, how do you think it is perceived by the wider therapy community?
I think this is really fascinating at the moment. It's definitely having a moment, that dreaded term. A moment, that's so trendy. What is that? That's so late. It's where we are, isn't it? Everything's a moment now. I think there's a split. I think there's, or maybe there's three splits. I think there's the people that are having a genuine reawakening to the power of nature. And I think a lot of people in the time of COVID are reconnecting with nature, which is really exciting. And I think, you know, I think people are realizing that, of course, the living world's vital for our well-being. And this is really this is really important. And it's nothing new. I think, you know, every generation, we remake and restory and re-explore our connection with nature and that innate wisdom. So, you know, fine, that's happening again. And then I think there's another two divisions. There's the one where people are still not convinced because they're very worried about this stretching of the therapeutic frame and the elements that are kind of radical, I guess, about its underpinnings, which are a challenge to some of the, you know, academic kind of ways of doing things or to just the way things have always been done. You know, there's a lot of emphasis on indigenous wisdom in the roots of ecotherapy, and that's not the same as, you know, the ivory tower of academia. So there's interesting things going on there. And then I think there's this emergence of people that are getting curious because it's a new method, because we're in kind of the COVID life now where social distancing is real. It's looking like it's here to stay. So I think people are having an emerging interest and like, oh, okay, this is a way that I can still keep working. And I think that's where there's the greatest opportunity to like, okay, let's look at what that really is, because that's fine. But that's not nearly as exciting as if you gave it more thought. You know, you could just go outside. and that would be that, and that would be fine. And nature would no doubt work on you and your client in a physiological way. You know, we know from being outside, it's just good for us anyway. So it's going to be working as magic if you take it outside. Yeah. But there's an opportunity to go a bit deeper, I think. But it's interesting because it's bringing it into the mainstream. And I think a lot of, particularly ecotherapy, when you give it that name, has been very fringe. And it's been, people have been a bit sniffy because, oh, it's a bit green, it's a bit hippie. But of course, we are getting greener. We're getting more aware. And actually, yeah, we're embracing, yeah, some of the stuff now that people have been talking about for a long time. And so I think there is a kind of like, oh, okay, maybe there is something in this after all. So it's exciting. I think it's exciting.
I think that does sound very exciting. I think it all sounds very interesting as well to understand that there are certain potential levels to it. So yes, as you say, you can just engage with, well, my therapy practice, moving it outdoors, but actually there's much more nuance to it than that. And actually there's so many different avenues, I suppose, it could go down and develop
I would worry that my worry, if I am worried, is, and I am a bit worried as I say it, I can feel a bit fluttery heart, there's a worry there that it will be co-opted by a medicalized way of doing therapy, and it will lose some of its proud tradition.
almost like just lose the therapy room, let's go for a walk around the block type of scenario, rather than an actual meaningful engagement with the outdoors.
Yeah, and it will kind of be, you know, when you see it being promoted by organizations that have supported other medical models and languages around therapy, when I see that happening, I think no, because that it's taking it away from its roots, and we should be active in holding the line that this is about meaningful relationship. It's relationship with nature, it's meaningful relationship with our therapist and our client, meaningful relationship with ourselves. And I can see the way this is going, because this is the scientific paradigm. We like to make everything evidenced through science, through a language that legitimizes it, because without that, it's just soul, it's psyche, it's all fluffy stuff. And it's not, it's actually indigenous native wisdom, and it's very important. It's about intuition, and it's that deeper stuff. But it's, yeah, I think that's my worry for it. But then I guess you could say, well, if it just gets people out there and it gets people to connect with nature, and so I don't know. I think that's going to remain to be seen what happens there, I think. And I suspect a lot of people are worried about that, but we can all find something to worry about, can't we? So.
We can. If people were interested, I know you run some introductory workshops, and you've got some running online soon, I think, haven't you? Could you tell the listeners what they involve?
It's interesting because I have always... I'm still very much in a stage in my journey with this, overused word, I'm sure, journey, but I'm still very client oriented, and I'm still very, I really want to be there with clients working through that sort of ground level. I'm not ready to move into supervision. I don't have aspirations to be a trainer at this point, but having seen this emergence of interest, I've just sort of felt like, actually, I do want to be involved in helping people think more deeply about their outdoor practice, just because I love it anyway. So as you can tell, I like talking about it. I'm taking up a lot of space here. But I also just, I really want them to have a great experience. I want their clients to have a great experience. I want to sort of try and uphold that tradition, perhaps, of ecotherapy. So the workshop I'm offering at the moment is going to be split into two parts, essentially. The first part will be around the practicals and the logistics, you know, insurance, contracting, risk assessments, when it's not suitable to go outside. And it's definitely the case that it's not always suitable. Looking at the issue of confidentiality, all of those kind of things, the things that when I started out, I was like too embarrassed to ask and felt that everything was a stupid question. So I'll be picking up some of that. And then we're going to move it a little bit into the deeper opportunities of outdoor, the kind of thing we've been talking about here, and perhaps getting a little bit, you know, into some of those. And very much it's only about my way of doing things. As I say, ecotherapy, outdoor therapy, nature therapy, it's a very broad church. Mine is largely around language, metaphor, movement, how we work with trauma outside. I've got certain interests, and so that will be moving into that in the second half. So that's what that's going to be about. So I hope that people will just be interested to come and perhaps hear a little bit more.
Well, I think it sounds very interesting, actually. And I think just from the discussions we've had today, I think I can imagine how good that is going to be, those workshops. If people wanted to kind of look, have a read themselves or watch anything, have you got any idea of any resources that people might be able to kind of access to if they were interested in this area?
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of literature. You know, if you just pop into any search bar, either ecotherapy or eco-psychology, you'll be off on your way, I think. There's some really influential names. Martin Jordan wrote some fabulous books. It's been really influential in my approach, and I know in a lot of people that I work with or part of groups with. He wrote some really great books. I think they're entitled Nature Therapy and Ecotherapy. You know, they're easy to find. And then there's lots of various people, books by Caroline Brazier, Linda Buzzell. There's lots of interesting stuff about the Buddhist influences in ecotherapy. If you put in eco-psychology, you get more of the underlying flavour of the philosophy around it, I suppose. So I would say that. Hayley Marshall, she's my supervisor. She runs courses and training. So there's lots of people, Nick Totten. There's loads and loads of people all doing different flavours. So I would just say, look around, explore the search terms and the different names. Try and work out how it fits with your own sort of existing stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
And then I think there's something about going deeper then again and getting into being interested in Indigenous wisdom. And this is very much the path I'm on at the moment, is coming back to that, coming back to the roots and just reading about nature and the land and interconnectedness. So I would, you know, encourage people to do that. And I guess most importantly, that's been, I think, gets really overlooked in the age of, you know, what can I read, what courses can I do, go interrogate your own connectedness to nature. This has been so fundamental to my ongoing kind of discovery in this work, is really asking, why does it matter to me? What do I get from it? There was a real moment of epiphany when I realized how I was using, in inverted commas, nature, and it is using, but that's not the whole of my relationship with nature, but how I'm using it to regulate my emotions. And how I go out into nature as part of a dissociative process in myself. So there's some really interesting stuff that you can get into, but I think it has to start from that kind of self-inquiry. So if you don't know anything about your own relationship with nature, I just think you're not going to be able to see it or facilitate it or be aware of it in others. And that's the same in all therapy, isn't it? That's why they say go and have therapy. You've got to know what it's like to sit in the other seat.
Thinking as you were talking about it, then I was thinking, well, as when we're training, and not just when we're training, when we're qualified, we access our own personal therapy, we need to regularly do that so that we've got a good understanding of ourselves. It's the same, isn't it, with this kind of approach? Actually, if you don't understand your own relationship with nature, it's quite hard to use that or be in that space if you haven't really got an understanding of how you engage with
it. If you're profoundly disconnected from nature, and let's face it, most adults are, most of us, this great research that came out from the University of Derby was like most adults are below the line of healthy well-being and nature connectedness for it to be facilitative for their well-being. Most adults fall below that. We start, the highest our nature connection ever is when we're kids, and it goes downhill basically. And then maybe it starts returning, but you know, how can we possibly work with other people's process outdoors if we are dead to it ourselves, essentially? And so really scrutinizing that and really being aware, and everyone has a different relationship with nature. Everyone is drawn to different aspects. It does different things for them. They regulate in nature in different ways. And so it's really worth exploring, and I think it's really overlooked. And that's what I've learned from my supervision outdoors and from Hayley is not to overlook that part of the process and just to get bookish about it. So much of ecotherapy is, as I say, about relationship and experience, that you have to bring your own into that. So I will just say to people, get out there first, even if you just do that sometimes, just do something to inquire into your own. And I'm hoping in future months, when there is some time, to create a new online module and hopefully some face-to-face stuff around developing your own relationship with nature, because sometimes it's not clear what that really means and how to start. And I think people think it's a grander thing than it is. A lot of it is observing and noticing. So I think that'll be a key part of the puzzle for people perhaps who are.
And almost feels like a really good starting place, actually, if you're interested in this area, is actually to just go out and experience nature, which you may have done already, but actually really reflecting on your relationship with it as a starting point before exploring anything further.
Yeah, because I think you get excited then. You're like, oh, there's this thing that perhaps has always been there and I hadn't given it much attention. And then you start going, oh my God, imagine if I go outside with my clients, well, I could open this up to them as well and learn about their relationship. So it enlivens it. It gets a lot more exciting rather than just, oh, well, we better go out then because we can't stay indoors at 2 meters apart, which is like, oh, it's such a loss. That is not where the gift lies.
Well, talking about our relationships with nature, I was reading on your website about your, in 2018, you ran solo, didn't you, through the Bosnian Alps, is that right?
That's right.
And I was just really interested in that and how, what was that experience like?
Oh, it was magic. And it was hard.
Yeah.
It was hard. I think I learned a lot about my mental fragility. I think I walked through the previous years with a bit of an overstated sense of kind of confidence in, I've got this, I'm resilient. And really saw a lot of flashiness in my emotions. And one minute would be euphoric and the next minute be absolutely broken and despairing and thinking I was going to die alone in the mountains and be eaten by wolves. So, it could change it could just change just like that. And so that was very humbling. But it was just, I'm a very introverted person. Usually I know I'm on social media quite a lot, but I like a lot of time to myself. What I get in my relationship with nature is very much when it's just me and outdoors. And I can just be myself and talk to animals and do all those kooky things that I've always done as a child. And so it's really freeing. So actually it was a real luxury to have 2 weeks and to move my body and to think about my own connection with nature and where I wanted my work to go. And it was exciting. And I was supposed to be going back out again next week to do the next leg in the same mountain range from Montenegro to Albania, but obviously had to cancel my flight.
Yeah,
which is a shame.
Yeah,
I was looking forward to that. It was a real, would have been a real chance to.
Well, it sounds wonderful, and I think if people are interested, just on your website, there is so many. You're an avid photographer, and there's so many photographs on there of. Like the outdoors and you kind of in beautiful place, and there's lovely photography on there if people are interested to go and have a look at some of those photographs. It was really lovely exploring your website, actually, because there's so much on there. The last thing that I kind of wanted to cover, which is, I think this is a really interesting, I'm sure people maybe have done this, but I hadn't really seen this, where you've kind of brought together the outdoors, but also some things online as well. So there was, on your website, you've been doing virtual walks where people can have a look at videos of people going for walks if they weren't able to kind of get out and access that for themselves, which I thought was a wonderful thing. But you've also been doing virtual group walks as well, which is on a Monday at 8 a.m. where you kind of take photographs of walks collectively of wherever each person is, and post them all up on social media at the time so people can kind of be experiencing that while they're on their own walk or from their own home. And I just thought both of those things were really interesting, and wondered what kind of response that you'd had around both of those projects.
Thank you. Thanks for looking them up. They all came out of in the time of COVID, as it shall now be known. And a real desire to offer something. I am so aware of my nature privilege. You know, we all have these different layers of privileges, and we're seeing that a lot at the moment, aren't we, this last couple of weeks. But before this, you know, I have been profoundly aware of having quite a lot of nature privilege and a lot of access, and very much moved to be here in this space, but that's still a privilege that I could do. And I guess I just really realized again afresh during lockdown that, you know, whether you were shielded person and were being told not to go outside, or you were, you know, in a quite a nature depleted area, and frankly the UK has got a terrible record of destruction of its natural kind of habitats, I just thought, what can I do? And I can't do an awful lot about that, but maybe I can just offer some simple resources. So yeah, I started creating these 10-minute walks that would try and sort of replicate just a normal walk with the ambient sound of nature, no narration, nothing flashy, just to give a real sense. And people started sending them in during lockdown. So I just popped them on YouTube and they've had a really good response. I mean, they don't have millions of hits, but I think for those who have used them, there's a sense that in the very least, they're just a moment of distraction from Netflix or scrolling or the news. You know, it's just 10 minutes of listening to bird song. We've had some lovely ones sent in from, you know, the Hebrides. Snowshoeing in the Sierra Nevada, and just lovely kind of lovely insights into other people's places, and that's been lovely, and it's had good feedback. I think they're quite calming, you know, they're not what we're used to. You're used to seeing a narrated video that's all tidy and it's on point and it's got people in it, and these aren't. So I don't know that people necessarily stay the full duration of the 10 minutes, but perhaps they just get what they need just to have a little moment of natural nature. And as for the runs, they came about because I was just so miserable after every Sunday government briefing that I thought, I can't be taking this into the week on Monday. And I tend to work perhaps erroneously sometimes, but I start from the position, if I feel something, perhaps other people are going to feel something similar. So I just put it out and said, I'm going to go for a run tomorrow. Who wants to join? And that first week, 13 people were like, yeah, let's do it. So I called it Run Walk Club. I want it to be as inclusive as possible. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. You can adjust the time or do it later. It doesn't matter whether you're on wheels or you're walking or you're running. Just let's go out. Let's notice nature. And nearby nature is so important to people's well-being. It's not, you know, it's not nature out there. It's what matters is the nature you're around in your own place. And so I wanted to have something light touch at the beginning of the week to reset, to connect people to group energy, to connect with nature, and to move your body in a way that feels good. And it just took off. The next week there were 60, and now we're on maybe week 5, week 6. It's not been going for long, but it seems to be a great moment for just the people to say, oh yeah, let's do it. And it's getting them out. And it's just, you know, it's a nice way of virtually connecting in maybe slightly different way from a formalized run club or the pressure of needing to perform and be athletic. So,
and yeah, that just sense, it's been of fun. Community and connection, which I think is lovely, but also through the medium of, you know, everyone taking a photograph of what's happening and where they are. So you're not only experiencing nature, but you're also kind of seeing what everybody else is how they're connecting to the world around them. And so I just think it's a wonderful thing. And sometimes you don't associate technology with nature and being able to connect with nature. And I just thought that was, both of those things were a great way of doing that.
Yeah, I'm excited by that because nature so often interrupts and disrupts it, you know, and it does. I mean, there's no getting away from that. But I'm interested in how we can facilitate better nature connection, where tech doesn't get in the way, but it encourages people and they feel empowered to use it for a bit, but maybe put it away. And but if, you know, we know that even images of nature are good for people's well-being. So if they're savoring the right kind of images, maybe that's something that's important when you're constantly being bombarded with all of the dark stuff around at the moment. So I'm interested in this and how it grows and seeing what other people are doing in this kind of space. I think it's quite exciting and it's going to be the future, isn't it? Technology is not going anywhere.
It's certainly not. I think the projects that you're involved in just sound very exciting. And I'm really interested to see, have you got anything else coming up kind of in the next 12 months that we haven't talked about? There's quite a lot you're already doing, I think. But
I don't know. I don't entirely know. I like not knowing. I like the mystery of it. I like the creating something out of nothing, kind of self-employed things, or like seeing what comes and then going, does that work? No, that falls flat. I do have my first book coming out. Can't really say much about that because it's not out yet, but that it's not about therapy. It's very much about nature relationship, nature connection for anybody, for anyone for just getting into it for emotional well-being. So that's exciting. I'm really, it looks, and that combines photos. It's a kind of essentially an illustrated book of thoughts and photos. So that's coming out in the autumn.
Okay.
I feel
you'll have to let us know so we can put a link towards that on our website.
I will. Thank you. Yeah. I will. Apart from that, I feel like recovering from this 6 months will be what I'm doing next year, as I think a lot of us will be. I feel like I'm going on a journey within the journey, if I'm honest. I feel like it's been a few years now and I'm moving into a different place with my practice and with my clients. And the last couple of weeks have just been devastating and powerful and so opening and so horrendous. I feel like I've got a lot of work to do I really want to diversify my practice. I really want to make it genuinely inclusive. I want to make it actively anti-racist. It needs to. And I think I've been doing some work on that in terms of returning to this Indigenous wisdom, trying to honour the actual voices and the people, not just appropriating that. The wellness industry doesn't have a good record for just culturally appropriating things. And so there's a lot of checking that I want to do, a lot of really scrutinizing my own work. And I want to carry on that journey. And I think in many ways, that's going to be quite a personal, private journey, and it's going to be a reckoning. But I think it has to happen. And I just feel like this is where I've been found through all of this. It's laid bare quite a lot of problems in myself and my own way of being or my own practice or our country. I feel like I want to be part of that work, and that's a lot.
It is,
but I really feel like we have to. And so, you know, not we have to because, you know, to tick boxes, but because it's so important. And I feel like a really shamefully late I've awakened to that, but I want to be part of it and want to be reliable in that way. So I think that's going to probably usurp any of the other kind of stuff. Apart from that, it's just, can we, you know, get as many people outside as possible and start the healing work? I mean, I think there's so much trauma around. I'm scared of what's coming down the line. I'm really scared for people. And I think, you know, there's therapists are going to have a large role to play in the repair work.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think there is going to be a lot that is going to that we will need to be there for over these next few months, if not years, potentially. The kind of fallout of the last few months. Thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed speaking to you. It's been really interesting. And I feel like I've learned quite a lot actually today chatting to you. And it's really inspired me as well, I think, to try and reconnect with nature. So I feel like I'm connected to nature, but I feel like I'd like to do that on a deeper level, I think, I currently do at this moment in time. So Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Thank you for having me on, and I take up a lot of air space, don't I? I just absolutely love the work, but thank you for indulging me in that.
I found it absolutely interesting, so thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Therapist Connect podcast. Go to www.therapist-connect.com for more discussions and debates.